Weather worries kept the price screen a healthy shade of green for most of the session. The problem is the lower range closes posted in most contracts. Did that erase the upside price momentum? Or was it another healthy pause in front of another push to the upside?
Live from the air-conditioned comfort of my palatial broadcast laboratory via Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Duane Bossy from Bolt Marketing. And in the fourth segment, Kerry Artak sorties his weekly Artak attack. And right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
So I've been looking for my notes. I haven't found them yet either, and it's kind of upsetting me. I've been looking for my notes from last week's Kerry Artak attack. Because we have blown through those overhead resistance levels in many cases. So, you know, what are those upside targets that we're looking at now? So it's going to be an interesting
update. These are unprecedented times. There have never been precedents that have deprecedensified. How would you say that? Deprecedentated. Deprecedented.
Right.
Before ever in the history of humankind, as far as we know.
Well, we've seen this kind of market action before. It happens. Straight
you
up.
Just ruined my whole monologue there, Chip. Come on. I'm trying to make up words here. I'm trying to make up words that no human can actually verbalize, and here we go.
Unprecedented.
Right. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Irregardless. I hit
it. Sorry. I'm sorry. I can't let that one go.
Love it. But the change in the chart outlook from last week to this week, boy, really, really significant. So getting an update from Kerry on what that means and what it has done to the upside targets, I think that's going to be very
important.
Great
to see it
important.
Follow through here on Monday.
Right, right. Yeah. And then, of course, we'll get Duane's take on not only the chart action, but this weather problem. Is it a price driver? You know, reality versus perception. Is there any difference in the commodity markets? I'm not too sure that there is. So,
Well, you know, my feeling on the matrix, I mean, are you really better off with that cord sticking out of the back of your neck or,
I don't know.
Which do you prefer?
All right. Let's get to the news so we can get to Jack.
Chip, September soft red winter wheat futures have touched the 20-day moving average for three consecutive sessions, and in each case, the price action triggered renewed selling. The moving average is trending downward, which puts resistance at about 496 for Tuesday's session. Harvest of the U.S. HRW and SRW wheat crops is expected to cap rally potential for the near term. Traders say prices are high enough, and the futures contains enough uncertainty that many growers are selling wheat off the combine. That will keep hedge requirements high for the near term. September hard red winter wheat was 4.5 cents higher at 438.5. September soft red firmed 1.25 to 493.25. September spring wheat climbed 2.5 cents to close at 512.75. Chip.
Yeah, there's a little bit of downside movement on crop projections coming out of Ukraine, out of Russia, out of Europe today, too. Yeah. But I think the market has grown a little tired of hearing that story.
Sure. Well, a forecast calling for above normal temperatures and normal to below normal rain across most of the Corn Belt through the third week of July was support for corn futures to open solidly higher. The push back up to the 360 level in December corn quickly triggered light profit taking, but corn did hold on to about half of the overnight gains. USDA this morning also reported the sale of 202,000 metric tons of corn for delivery to China in the new crop marketing year. Mexico also bought 122,000 metric tons of new crop corn and a cargo of corn for delivery in the 2021-22 marketing year. September corn futures 3 cents higher, 346.5. December corn gained 2.75 cents to close at 356.25. March corn closed at 367.5, up 2.5 cents today.
Yeah, not just a new crop sale to Mexico, but a new crop sale to Mexico. That one really caught my attention. I want to get Duane's take on that here in a bit.
USDA this morning also announced the sale of 264,000 metric tons of U.S. soybeans for delivery in the current marketing year. That helped August bean prices to push through resistance at $9 for the first time since March 6, Chip. Today's action also closed the March 9 downside price gap, which triggered a round of light profit-taking. November beans finally got a close above $9, but the low-range close did take some of the outside momentum out of the market. Right. August bean futures were 7 1/4 cents higher at 898.5. September beans gained 9 cents to close at 899. November bean futures closed at 906.25, up 9.5 cents today. That's not bad.
Yeah, not too bad at all. And we're still a month away at least for most of the bean crop to be concerned about hot and dry conditions, but still, you got to give it you got to give it some conditions leading up to that pod fill period to help them put the pods on before, and some crop concern I think is getting built into the bean market too.
October cotton 2 ticks higher, 63.57.5, and D's cotton gained 19 points to 63.14. On the livestock side, August live cattle futures 70 cents higher at $100 and a dime. December cattle gained 112.5 to close at 107.05, and August feeders jumped a buck 27.5 to 136.15. And on the snout side, August hogs 7.5 cents higher, 49.27.5. D's hogs 57.5 higher, 52.02.5. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Hey, doing great. Nice warm day here, but at least I'm sitting in front of the lakefront. Giant air conditioner working to my favor today.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Boy, what a difference a week makes. I mean, we were higher a week ago today, Jack, but after the week that we had, attitudes are completely different in that market.
Oh yeah, well we had the planning report, which was a shock in and of its own, and now we're kind of we're trying to decide whether we're looking at hot and dusty forever and ever, or at least forever and ever when it matters, and or if this is just another head fake. So it's quite a time, and the market was nervous today. It was pretty quiet, but it was nervous.
Yeah, I'll bet you heard my question that I'm going to get into to Dwayne with. Is there a difference between reality and perception in the futures market?
Well, yeah, there is. The reality is, I think that that there's more cushion, for example, in the corn, and that's also the perception. So you saw the corn market react a little bit less less forcefully, but if the reality comes true that we're going to have significantly less corn, then prices are going higher. So there it's kind of a subtle question, and it's hard to differentiate sometimes, but I do believe that there is a difference.
Excellent. Weather is what we're keeping our eye on through the rest of the week.
Oh, I think so. I think unless there's some really big demand news, but even so, today we had pretty decent demand news with China buying soybeans and corn and Mexico buying corn, and that wasn't really what floated this market. It was the weather.
Gotcha. All right, Jack. Thanks, buddy. Keep putting that air conditioner to good use out there.
Oh, absolutely. It's really kind of pleasant here, but, boy, you don't have to go far away, and it gets real hot real fast.
Gotcha. Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. All right, coming up next, we've got Dwayne Bussey from Bolt Marketing right here on AgriTalk.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
For a soul to steal, he was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it."
83 years old,
player too.
Charlie Daniels.
And if you'd care to take a dare,
could we call him a pioneer? Yes. Could we call him a pioneer?
Oh, I think
there
he
are,
can.
Here's where I'm coming from. There are a lot of people they talk about bro country, right? Like dude country, the new sort of country. And it does, in my mind, take some influence, at least from the hip hop world, from the, a more groove based kind of a setup for the music, which is awesome, a rich amalgam of styles.
Okay.
But I've always listened to Devil Went Down to Georgia as having some deep roots in disco, especially that middle breakout section with a little bang, 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 bang,
bang, bang, bang, bang. Yeah.
I think maybe he did. He pioneer modern country with that song. I would argue, yes, he did.
I would say that he contributed to it very much. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Devil Went Down. What was that? 1982. I would say.
Now I got to go to the Google.
I think that was probably 1982. So talk about being out in front.
Oh yeah.
Of a trend with something like that. Yes, man. Oh man. Interesting.
1979.
I felt like there was a seven in there. I did.
Thank you, Big Apple. Man, 1979. Wow. All right, let's get into the conversation now with Dwayne Bussey from Bolt Marketing up in Britain, South Dakota. How you doing, Dwayne?
Hey, I'm doing good. Feeling a little bit older now that you said how old that song is. That's a great song.
Me too. Jeez. Oh, man.
That's a sad one. Yeah, he's a good dude, seems like.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Patriotic, not afraid to speak his opinion, but he did it with civility, and he did it with he was informed before he opened his mouth. You know, he didn't just spout off to spout off.
That's refreshing nowadays, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, all right. What's the weather like up your way, buddy?
About like everywhere else, pretty hot. But the difference in the Dakotas here lately is a little wet, a little rainy.
Yep.
North Dakota got some nice rains last week and some needed rains. Poor North Dakota. Can we give that state a break every once in a while? Last year, dry to start the year, got it all planted. Then we got to wheat harvest, and it never stopped raining. And, of course, they just about finished 2019 harvest now, last week.
Yeah.
It was a long year for them. And then they got crazy dry this spring again. So spring wheat crop, I'll dive right into that right away. Little concerned that the yield might be below trend in North Dakota there. I've gotten central North Dakota, a few clients telling me that wheat got about just above ankle to shin high and starting to head out and just has that ugly blue-gray color. The rain might have been a little too late, but there's other areas that'll be good. But I think that's your big spring wheat country right there, and I think they were hurt before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gosh, with the wheat though, Dwayne, can you put a supply side scare into wheat?
Boy, I wish I could, but that's like every time I talk about wheat, I go back to the, you know, here's a little bit of a bullish story. Hey, Russia might slow down exports. Hey, Europe's got a less of a wheat crop this year. And then I always come back to, but we still have plenty on hand. We really need like a 2 or 3 year type drought scenario in a couple different countries to really get a bullish story. So to answer your question, no, I can't get too excited about it.
Right, right. And in the meantime, like Davis was talking about in the news, the story that we're hearing now is that the wheat price is good enough, that there is too much uncertainty for the future about what's going to happen next in wheat, whether it be, is Russia going to pull the plug on exports or is Russia going to increase their exports? Same kind of story on Ukraine. They just don't want to hold wheat. So as it's being harvested out of the HRW country in particular, it's going straight on the truck and going to town for sale.
Yeah, and I don't blame them. You know, the whole Russia thing, isn't it interesting? They'll export as much as they can and then shut the exports down if they have to. They're already talking about that for next year off of this 2020 crop. But you know what probably is the most bullish thing for wheat out there that we haven't talked about yet is the lower U.S. dollar, sharply lower today. That's really what we need. We need a sharply lower dollar to be able to compete with Russia's Ukraine for that export business. And then for us not to rally our price too much, of course, as well.
Right. Right. Yeah. If all of this, if we could sneak like 3 or 4 solid export weeks in before we get too much of our price reaction, just get some sales on the books, that would help us.
I know. We usually like to hear the rumor, and of course, we're a futures market, so we'll rally 15 cents and then just totally squash the idea of selling more than two shipments out to anyone. But
right.
Oh, well.
Yep, yep, exactly. Okay, so I know you're up there in northeast South Dakota, but to your south in Nebraska, Kansas, there, I saw stress in the corn crop yesterday. I think Minnesota, after some recent rains, is in pretty good shape for the most part. I think Wisconsin has caught good moisture, but when you got Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois showing some areas of stress, it's got to be a concern to this market.
It's, yeah, no, it obviously is. And then when you take, you know, 4 million, 5 million acres away from the trade, what
yep.
we thought was happening, then it becomes a concern, doesn't it?
Right.
You put
right.
those two on top of each other last week, and you got the rally we had. I am a little disappointed with today's trade action and the volume, too. I really thought going into the night trade last night, we were either going to be sharply one way or the other. Then when I looked at the forecast, I was like, huh. It's kind of about the same as what we had Thursday at noon when we stopped trading. So not a big movement here, but concern for the market, definitely. And I think the bigger news, probably some of the most bullish news in corn, is actually the funds still being heavily short.
Right.
How short, we don't know. We'll look at the commitment of traders report this afternoon and know a little bit more there. But I wish I could tell you I'm crazy bullish corn, but I'm just not. I think this is a weather rally, and mm-hmm. most weather rallies should be sold. I don't know where the top is. Let me say that first. But I will say with more confidence that I think we're lower. December corn will be lower than the 356 close today come fall. I see.
Wow.
I can say that with quite confidence.
Okay. Do you know something about this weather that I don't?
yeah, good. Good question. No, I guess I'm just going off of what normally happens during a weather
yeah,
market.
Yeah.
You know, we get excited about it, but I think there's plenty of subsoil out there. There's troubled areas. There will be by the end of this week for sure some drought areas,
yeah.
and you're going to see on social media more onion-leafed corn.
Right.
But you're also going to see a lot of corn that's still good, and even taking the acres off, Chip, I'm still looking somewhere close to a $3.0 billion for an ending stock. I know the trade's lower than that. When I think of $3.0 billion,
mm-hmm.
I just think of corn lower than 356 come fall.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's an excellent point. But what that means is if we do stay hot and dry and we do give this corn crop some added character as we make our way past tassel, past the silks and mm-hmm. into kernel fill, it's going to give us a selling opportunity. We just can't be afraid to take advantage of it, correct?
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm trying to nail home is to the producers out there listening is, you know,
okay.
2 weeks ago we were crying in our beer wondering when we'd be able to sell corn. And this is probably still not a really good profitable level unless you're yielding really high. But if you're yielding really high, kind of hence the whole problem I'm bringing up too, it's a selling opportunity somewhere in here. Now, I need to be careful saying that because I could be wrong for a good month with the funds as short as they are.
Yep.
If they want to flip and go long and this forecast stays hot and dry, I don't like to say it'd be a hated corn rally because none of us hate the corn rally at
right.
all. But if I'm saying you should sell today, I'm going to look foolish later. I understand that. But it's remember, even 2012, after August 10th, that market dropped really yeah. hard into fall. So weather rallies, yeah, need to be looked at as being sold.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it can add something. It's going to pull beans along, regardless of the calendar. It's going to pull beans along, won't it?
Oh, yeah. Honestly, if you ask me, I think beans are the thing that should be pulling corn along. I am kind of friendly to the bean market. I've got ending stocks just tighter than the average trade guess. But, I mean, I don't even know where the average trade guess is. If it's closer to 395 for this Friday's report, I'm closer to 300. And Chip, 300, that's tight. And remember, the
yep.
big weather month is August still.
Right, exactly. You know what? I want to go to that when we come back. Why you're down close to 300 million bushels on bean carryover. We got Dwayne Bussey, Bolt Marketing on AgriTalk.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize American Farmland Trust for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmer's First Thing Today. In the week ahead, Senate and House lawmakers are on their July 4 recess, but House committee action is scheduled related to some fiscal year 2021 appropriations. There is growing support for a new round of fiscal stimulus when the Senate reconvenes on July 20th. President Donald Trump on Wednesday will host Mexican President Obrador. A late attendee might be Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Beijing is ready to counter U.S. as both navies hold drills in South China Sea. Trump has not yet signed a bill that would levy sanctions on some Chinese officials over Beijing's tightening grip on Hong Kong. And Grassley says the Senate will not hold a WTO disapproval vote. Go to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
See, this is what I'm talking about.
I hear you.
I could take this and you combine it with Kenny Rogers. and you get Charlie Daniels.
I'm trying to mash that up with the gambler right now, and it's kind of mushed up, not mashed up.
It ain't easy. You've got to be a pioneer of the sport. You know what I mean?
That's right. Love it. All right. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That is Davis. We are talking to Dwayne Bussey from Bolt Marketing today. Before we get back to that, Davis, go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, September hard red winter wheat 4.5 cents higher today at 438.5. September soft red firmed a penny and a quarter to 493.25. September corn futures 3 cents higher, 346.5. March corn closed at 367.5. That's up 2.5 cents. August soybean futures 7.25 cents higher at 898.5. Novi bean futures closed at 906.25, up 9.5 cents on the day. October cotton 2 ticks higher, 6357.5. August live cattle futures were 70 cents higher at 100 bucks and a dime. August feeders jumped 127.5 to 136.15. And August lean hogs, 7.5 cents higher, 49.27.5. That's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. I found my notes from last week.
Oh, you found them? Just in time, baby. Good
time. 362 in the September contract, 362.5 was the upside target.
And in
soybeans, if the August contract could close above 890, it was projecting out to 962.
Close at 898 today.
Yeah. So we'll see if those projections where they stand now since we've accomplished that. Okay.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing, Dwayne, that was happening a week ago right now was we were still contemplating whether or not, if the weather forecast held true, if we could even get a rally. And then we get the 5 million acre cut on planted corn acres and weather became an issue. It's really about that simple. So, okay, work us down to 300 million on your bean carryover for the end of the 2020-21 marketing year. How do we get there?
Yeah, there's two parts, I guess, to that, how I get lower than the average trade estimate. The first one is exports. I guess I'm just a little bit more bullish exports than the average trade guess. And I wish I had solid facts to tell you why I'm correct. Or, you know, it's just China sure has been an aggressive buyer lately. Now, that could go two ways, too. You could say, well, they've been such an aggressive buyer of South America beans, they don't need as many from us. But I think when it comes to building back their hog herd the way they want to, the way they want to commercialize it. I think they want to have a ton of beans on hand. And just in case President Trump gets reelected, I think they kind of want to have some beans on hand as well, actually.
Yep.
So I have a higher export demand. One other thing I do have in there, and this could totally be way off, but I'm tweaking the acres down just a little bit lower than even the June 30th. You know, maybe 200 to half million down. They did have that different column in this time, didn't they, of the acres left to be planted. And there was a lot of
acres. It was north of 12 million acres.
It was. And, you know, I know a lot of that's in probably in North Dakota. And they had North Dakota at 6.0 million. And I just, that seemed just a touch high for me for as wet as they were this spring. And just the overall economics of it at the time of planting. I just don't know if it all got planted, I guess.
Yeah. Lack of incentive. There was more incentive to pull the pin than to try to mud stuff in this year.
Oh, what a flip from a year ago, Chip, in my area. I mean, we would mud everything in. Remember what corn was doing this time last year? It literally bought acres. It gave up the acres this year. I know everyone's confused as where do they go, but, you know, with the fringe acres, they do. They just disappear. That's why they're called fringe acres.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. You know, I want to jump over to the cattle market. Can we do that here?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, what's your thoughts? Because here, I want to set it up with this. I've been purposely leaving most of the fundamentals out of the news that Davis reads because I don't know if the fundamentals have mattered to this cattle market for quite a while. The only fundamental that really matters is the fact that we are... We're still overwhelmed with supply of hogs. We're still overwhelmed with supply of cattle. Cattle seem to be managing it better, but I feel like maybe we're going to have to start including some box beef trade, the cash trade, and everything in cattle because they might be respecting fundamentals again.
I think they're going to eventually now too, but I get what you're saying there for. What felt like the longest time here, there's been what a lot of guys have called a Santa Claus bid in the cash cattle market as well, right? Just and boxed beef, was that really a true demand or not? COVID just totally tipped that whole market upside down, fundamentally wise. You know, heavy elephants that need to be killed, and we're still working on that, obviously. But now that we flipped and the futures market is above the cash. Well, you know, with big, heavy elephants out there, you can actually look to start the delivery. Now, of course, August is a long ways until that can be delivered on, but it's going to be tough for the futures market to just get up and go and just completely ignore those fundamentals you were talking about. But if I'm bullish this market, I'm going to ignore the fundamentals too because they're not really good, are they? They're just a lot of cattle and cutouts are trending lower. They're finding a little bit of support, but I don't think they're going to chop and go make a V bottom and go higher here. I got to be honest with you, Chip. I just really don't know about this market with the whole COVID thing. You know, the lack of restaurant demand really scares me. I know everyone always tells me, well, everyone's got to eat. I know, but you don't have as much waste. And let's hear it for the U.S. producer. I mean, they produce high quality meat that gets consumed in restaurants, not the hamburger helper that I'm going to get, you know, I don't, you get what I'm saying there? It concerns me.
Yeah, no, I do understand what you're saying. I think we've got more home cooks or home chefs than what we did 3 months ago. I think they've learned how to use some of these higher valued cuts. It doesn't intimidate them as much as it used to. I think there's that going on, Dwayne, but there's no getting around the simple fact that it's just way too easy for millions of Americans to say, well, where are we going for supper tonight? And you go out and you get that burger or you get that steak or you get those ribs or you get whatever the case is. And it's so hard to replace that demand that has been lost. It is very concerning, concerning.
I read a stat, and I don't know, I didn't fact check it, but 40% of all food was consumed outside of the you know, a residence, a home before COVID. And I'm like, wow, 40%.
And 50% of beef.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you mix that with an uneasy economy, highest unemployment we've had in a long time. It just doesn't scream, oh, cattle market should rocket this year. And I know it doesn't have to be fundamental, especially in the cattle market. I usually tell clients or anyone listening to me that you got a $20 range on whatever the funds want to do in cattle, and then the cash market can literally follow it a little bit. But it just scares me. I mean, now the trade action to end last week and today looks very bullish, very impressive. It's stopping me from hedging right now, I can tell you that, because the trade action looks good. But I'm just waiting for it to look a little toppy, and then I'm going to pounce on hedgers.
Okay. On the hog side of things, that hogs and pigs report, I was trying to be a silver lining guy with that, with my quick analysis on that hogs and pigs report, and I was trying to focus on the farrowing intentions, but there's just no getting past the market hog inventory. Just overwhelming this market.
It does for right now. You're right. Yeah. And no, I did catch several of your interviews in the afternoon talking about that in the morning show as well, too. And you're right, long term, you know, there maybe is some silver lining, but it's just when I get reports like that, it's all about right up front. And up front, we just, man, we got a lot of production here. Again, it's almost like the wheat situation to me. It's we have too much here, so you don't expect much of a rally. Now, I know cutouts are starting to bounce, but if I don't think there's a lot of restaurant demand for beef, I don't know how much there is for pork either. So I know it's not consumed quite the same, but it still makes me nervous. What I'm trying to say, though, is when I'm comparing it to wheat is if we get the U.S. dollar low enough, maybe it's cheap enough where China just can't resist and they buy more pork from us. But it feels like you're betting on the come, though. It makes me nervous.
Well, and their pork prices are going up. I don't remember what the percentage increase was, but we talked about it a little bit last week. Their domestic pork prices are going up. It's making it more attractive for us, for those suppliers to go ahead and import some more pork. But and it's been happening. It's been happening. Mm-hmm. The thing is, we're seeing pork export numbers on a weekly basis. Like 2 years ago, we couldn't have imagined selling 35,000 metric tons in a month. And now, if you don't top that, it's like, oh.
I know. If you don't hit 40, it's disappointing now. And you're right. I don't want to make it sound like we're not exporting any pork, because year over year, the numbers are fantastic. They are for cattle, too. It's just we've got so much production and a little bit tweak and lower demand, and it doesn't scream a bullish market here. I think we got to trend sideways at best here. I sure hope we're going down. I don't think we have to go down anymore from here.
Right. Dwayne, it's always fun to talk with you. Thank you, man.
Yeah, anytime, bud.
All right. That is Dwayne Bussey, Bolt Marketing up in Britton, South Dakota. When we come back, Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory, right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Good conversation with Dwayne. I always enjoy having Dwayne on. Just kind of a real common sense approach is the feeling that I get from Dwayne on his strategies. You know, we're getting a rally. Hey, heads up, take advantage of it. Put your price orders in place. You know, stuff like that. Don't expect that it's going to last forever. Weather rallies don't, and we need to be aware of that. Okay. But helping to push this thing along, it feels like, is the technical side of the market, the chart side of the market. Let's get an update on that from Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. How you doing, Kerry?
I'm doing great, Chip. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Glad that you could be here. Don't forget, everybody, Kerry's got a 2-week free trial waiting for you at artakadvisory.com. ARTACadvisory.com. Corn, Kerry, take it away.
Yeah, December corn. You know, after last week's rally, Dec corn has quickly reached a long-term ceiling at 362.5. If you recall from last week's show, I mentioned that a settlement last Friday above 336.75 should yield 362.5 within 3 to 5 weeks. You know, but with that volatility spike from last week's reports, that move played out in about 3 to 5 hours. So in any event, 362.5, it's our long-term ceiling, 362.5, below which weakness can reemerge into later year. In other words, at this juncture, present buying pressures are considered counter-trend in nature, with the market highly susceptible to falling back to 307.75 by the end of August, possibly lower into later year. Now, downside this week, 337.5 can contain selling through next week, with a weekly settlement below 337.5 indicating that 307.25 level within about 2 to 3 weeks, where the broader corn market can bottom out into autumn. Now, upside, a clear weekly settlement this Friday above 362.5 would nullify the long-term sell signal that was triggered last March below that level. And with that, I'd expect continued gains into later summer, 407.25, then expected within 3 to 5 weeks, 465 even, attainable within 3 to 5 months of closing the week back above 362.5. But until then, know that this market remains susceptible to failure into later summer below 362.5. On to November soybeans. The last week's show, I mentioned that closing last Friday above 890 even would trigger a buy signal into later summer, and that's exactly what happened. The 890 even level is now considered a floor of support that can contain selling through August, and above which 960 even remains a 2 to 3 month upside target. Along the way, 933 even can contain weekly buying pressures, with a close above 933 even accelerating that 960 even objective to within about 2 to 3 weeks, where the broader soybean market can top out into next spring. The 960 level is also a significant upside continuation point into next spring if by chance Nova beans happen to settle above that level on a weekly basis in the coming weeks. Downside, closing the week back below 890 even would neutralize last week's longer-term buy signal, and with that, 830 even becomes a 2 to 3 week downside target, able to contain selling through August, and that's also the point to settle below for tipping the market even further south into autumn trade.
Okay.
August live cattle. Longer term, it's very similar to what I've been saying for a number of weeks here. Longer term, I remain bullish AUG live cattle above 88.95 into contract expiration, really, and above which 105.25 still remains a target. I think it's likely to be tested before the month of July is out. 105.25 can contain summer highs, and following a test of 105.25, the market could, over the following 2 to 3 months, fall back to 88.95. But if we were to close any week above 105.25, then 125 even becomes the next realistic 2 to 3 month upside target, where the broader market can top out into next spring. Downside, 93.65 can contain selling into later July, but if we close Friday, the week itself, below 93.65, that would signal a good July high, and the next few weeks should fall back to that long-term support level at 88.95 I mentioned a moment ago, or once again, we can bottom out through summer, and above which 105.25 remains a likely 3 to 5 week target. And that's about all I got for those three, Chip.
All right. Hey, we've got a little bit of time here. Last week, on hogs, I believe we were talking about the August contract. You were looking for that close. We needed to close above 53.40, right? Well, we haven't gotten that.
No, we haven't. And that's 52.55 this week. It's coming down.
Okay.
It's a channel top holding below it. I still think 42.70 is likely over the next few weeks. That's a long-term support area able to contain selling through the rest of the year. Now, upside, if we can get above 52.55 on Friday and close above it, that's a good summer low from what I can see. 65 even, then expected, you know, by the end of August, where the broader lean hog market can actually tap out through the balance of the year. But 52.55 is our near-term ceiling. Have to get up and over it for recovery to really take off.
Okay, very good. 52.55, got it. All right, Kerry, thanks, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Chip. Take care.
You bet. That's Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. Okay. National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook. Davis, it's basically confirming what Michael Clark from BAM WX told us this morning. The above normal temperatures, and let me jump back in. Here we go. The above normal temperatures sticking around in the 6 to 10 day, July 12th through the 16th. below normal precipitation expected over most of the Corn Belt. Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, southern Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. The only spots that we're looking for normal to above normal precipitation, northern Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota. You know, every place else is looking at above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. Now, importantly, let's jump out to the 8 to 14 day, July 14th through the 20th. The above normal temperatures stick around. As a matter of fact, the odds of above normal temperatures increase for right in the middle of the Corn Belt, Minnesota, Iowa, northern Illinois, Indiana, 70% odds. And we've got below normal precipitation expected, Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, Kansas, Missouri, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan. It's getting sketchy, dude.
I told you last week my weekend plans included helping my dad clean up a bin site, which has since been planted to beans. And in fairness, it was on a bit of a hilltop, but man, it was dry out there. This was, Saturday, I think we went out there. Dry.
All right. Thanks for listening today. Appreciate it. You got to come back tomorrow morning. Eric Mittenthal from the North American Meat Institute will be my guest because I think it's like hot dog month or something.